this came to me anonymously. It's apparently a State Department. It's on the September 2 shoot down at the C-130 deployment. I don't know if you have that document. It's pretty old, but I thought it's maybe something you'd like to look at. This is an excerpt from a document that was prepared by Joint Task Force Russia, I guess, and the Soviets prior to the 50th anniversary or something of victory in Europe or in Normandy or something like that. I just highlighted some things. I thought it was interesting. I had some major problems with it. But that's it's not the whole document. There's those things that...
Oh, you don't have any dates or...
No, it was done before the 50th anniversary of Normandy or something. It was a prepared thing for a joint statement. General Wohl was involved and others were involved. That came to me anonymously as well. I believe that was anonymously. I had the whole thing, but it was, one of these political things. You're getting ready to celebrate an anniversary. So consequently, things were being discussed and stated, and I just highlighted some items in there which raised my eyebrows or disturbed me. Because I've noticed that over the years, the Soviet story seems to grow a little bit more each time there seems to be a discussion. It just seems to grow. First there was nothing, and now we have an analytic office, and then this and that. So it's kind of like a human relations type thing. The more you talk about the issue, the more information seems to pop out. So I found that to be interesting. And it's on both sides, too. There's writing on both sides. But I think General Wohl's in there. I don't know if it's Joint Task Force Russia or what. But it appears to be a transcript, a discussion of... how they're going to prepare a final statement for the anniversary of the ending of World War II or Normandy or something like that, victory in Europe. We're both presidents who have a joint statement, and this was the discussions leading up to the final preparation of the document.
Who's John Brown?
He's a researcher.
Okay. So he's the one who sent you this?
Probably, yes.
I have many more.
John Brown's a guy you should talk to if you're interested in World War II. He has got great research on World War II and tons of documents. He's some guy that I have his phone number if you'd like to call him someday.
Yes.
I think his father, the father-in-law used to be the ambassador to Russia, Mr. Duke. And he's been ripped over the coals pretty good, so I think if you're kind and gentle to him, he might be a very cooperative individual. You can be kind and gentle, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
His name is John M.D. Brown. His address is Post Office Box 30, Petrolia, P-E-T-R-O-L-I-A,
D-E-R-O-L-I-A,
California. 95558-0030. His phone number is 1-707-629-3547. He wrote the book MB Moscow Bound. He's an excellent researcher. He's written several books, Rice Paddy Grunt or something like that. So, if you'd like to talk to him, I don't think you'd have any objections. I really don't. I was following the Soviet statements on this ever since Yeltsin made his statement and retracted it, and that big mess that went on, Mm-hmm. And I've been watching the Soviet statements very closely. I've talked to a lot of missionaries that go to the Soviet Union and come back. And they're very interesting to talk to if you ever get a chance to do it. Also, down in Denver, I don't know if they're still there, but the Arvin Commander recall fast Eddie that was at Way in 72. Some of his battalion commanders are now out of, are back in the United States, are out of his re-education camps. And one of them had some very interesting name on Harley, interesting information on Harley Hall. And they're still down. I believe there. I can give you a phone number if you want to get in contact. Over there, still around. If you're interested.
Yeah, name and phone number again.
You know, these are fast Eddie's battalion commanders. They told me when I was down in Denver, they told me some things about Harley Hall and some of the stuff that was going on in 72. I think you could probably get a hold of them through their a POW group in Denver. Donald Stafford. I don't have an address, but I have a phone number, 1-303-986-6734. They're the some type of POW/MIA coalition out of Denver. His brother is on the Caporelli Stafford flight. His brother was an F-111 that was lost. So he has a personal interest in the issue.
Did you write down the stuff? I just, no, if you want to go ahead.
So I mean, he does, he's not an outsider. He does have a deep personal interest as far as the... in the capsule, some of those so-called reports about there was a capsule off the flight of his brother's aircraft and you know, stuff like that. So I think he'd be very cordial to talk to you. But he does have a personal interest in the whole issue. And he's a nice man. And both him and his wife are very nice people.
Jerry, where's this document from?
I assume it's from State Department. But you can call Mr. Brown and ask. What's the declassification statements down there? State classification, released, declassified. Well, I assume it's probably out of Department of... Yeah, Department of something. State, it looks like state to me. Looks like it's come out of Department of State, because that's a State Department action there. Looks like STATE there. Beginning by reading that, I get the impression that it's kind of looking for some mutual political or policy statement that can be made. It really doesn't look like an in-depth study. You know, it looks like, what can we possibly agree on? You know? So we have a joint statement by both the President of Russia and the President of the United States. But I found it interesting. And there's one other thing that I don't think you can get a hold of, but there's something I'd like to have you checked out. If you can, if you have time. When Congressman Smith, when Senator Smith was a congressman, he received a letter from General Shufeldt. And General Shufeldt, who was in charge of BIA or something at that time, asked if he would approach me and for a meeting. And I was given the address for General Shufeldt down to his room number. And so I wrote a letter to General Shufeldt to that room number in the Pentagon, and in the letter I brought up specific cases that I'd like to talk about, which is the C-47Q, San Francisco Morris, and you know, some other stuff, and made some statements of what my interests were. I mailed that letter. The letter went to the Pentagon because it was stamped, and it says Pentagon Mailroom. Next to General Shufeldt's hands, it says DDL delivered. That's crossed out, and it says not DDL, not delivered. And there's a stamp up by my address that says return to sender. And across the front of the letter it says NGB, not government business. I turned that letter over to Congressman Smith, now Senator Smith. He has the letter. I never opened it when it was returned to me. But I often wondered, you know, that, I considered that to be a direct insult to me. I mean, I'm asked to cooperate. I do cooperate. And my letter comes back NGB. And I gave that letter totally intact, unopened. Congressman Smith, who is now Senator Smith, I was really quite angry What I did is I made a photocopy of the outside, which has the NGB on it. It's in the briefing strip, which I turned over to Congress and NSA. But I was really upset because here I was asked by a general who asked a congressman to ask me to cooperate. I agreed, sent the letter exactly where it was supposed to be. On the letter, there was confirmation it was received. Then that was crossed out, returned to sender, and NGB across the front, not government business. I was very angry when I got that back. Tremendously angry. Because it was like saying, hey, we had hoped you would refuse to do it, so we can go out and say, hey, look, he's a scared dog to us. That's the impression I got going. I hope I'm wrong. And I'm also hoping that somebody intervened on that letter before General Shufeldt. Probably never saw it, but some lackey in between did something and sent it back to me. It was a slap in the face. Because I can't imagine a general doing that after he requested a meeting to a congressman. I just can't imagine a general would do something that crass. It has to be some lackey in between that didn't want the general to talk to me. You know, and that letter exists. It's on the briefing strip, and it's in the hands of the United States Senate because it was handed to him personally in front of six other congressmen. What year was this? 88, I believe, because I think Captain Raymond Daniel brought me out at Congressman Smith's request to meet with these people privately. And Daniel's put up the bill for the airline ticket, and I stayed at his house.
Jerry, can you go over that, when you were talking about when you were at Samsun Air Station in Turkey.
Uh-huh. Oh, about what I saw?
Yeah, and just in case we missed it on the tape.
The thing was, is when I got when I went from Samsun up to Trabzon, at that point, what I knew about these C-130 mission shootdown, here's what I saw in Tripoli. Target destroyed. That's what we saw. I didn't know if there was any survivors or anything else. I didn't know that. When we had this sister unit exchange program.
Tuslog.
I was in Tuslog Det 3-2, and I went to that, which was at Samsun.
Right. The sister unit was Tuslog 3-1.
3-1 at Trabzon. When I went up there, I saw a paper that looks like a briefing, like the SMW would give to the unit commander. It looked like a little briefing paper or something like that, saying that there were survivors, parachutes. And then I saw, which was, like I said before, was not on intercept paper. But like you mentioned, it could have been a gist or something. And it had PBS, the ground controller, you know, the PBS, and talking about parachutes. There was no references that I saw of anybody on the ground captured alive, but they were in parachutes. Now, like I said, the question asked NSA, and I already know the answer, but that's something I want to hold back, is did anything happen in Soviet communications within a relatively short period of time, I'm talking 3 to 6 months, that can relate to the capture of and successful debrief and interrogation of any survivors after that aircraft? And that same question should apply to the C-47 crew.
Okay, and one other thing.
Straight now? You straight on that?
Yes.
Okay.
And another is the Urdu?
Oh, the Urdu people. They worked on the base. They were, I could walk down the hall and they'd tell me about Afghan slave traders taking people up. These sighting reports, so-called sighting reports, were handled by a consular officer. I also, with the Canadians up at the dam at Warsak, talking to people up there. They know people being taken. The Urdu people that I talked to, because I got very close to them. I went to several of their weddings. Houseboys, brother, there was relatives, women that came back that were used in slave labor. Some were cooking, some were just hauling wood, some were pouring cement. They saw Caucasians. They definitely referenced Germans and Hollanders, and because these people speak perfect English. This was not a translation problem.
Did they say, I don't know if you said this, but where, they give you a location exactly?
Yes, it was, what they said was Diswali, which is part of the...
Diskagan.
The Diskagan, that's where they said the large
grave.
Graves.
The grave was.
The best my memory, it was at Diswali, D-Z, let's get the map out here. And some of the places they didn't know the names, but I'm sure they said Diswali. I'm positive they said Diswali. Diswali would be...
That's in the Kazakh area again, right?
Diswali would be right in this area. The Swale was the airfield for to support the Turyutan missile test range, you know, for Space One, right by Kizil Ordu.
Okay.
Within a few miles of Kizil Ordu.
And the area you're pointing at is down in the Kazakh
right.
area near...
That's where the TTMTR was.
A little north of Tashkent?
Yes, northwest, I believe, isn't it?
Okay. Well, is it on, is it not on there, is it?
No, the Swale isn't on there.
But you it, know how to spell it?
Yes, I do. See, it's the airfield that served the Turyutan missile. See, we had Kizil Ordu, and the missile launch site was right in here, and the Swale was right in there, too. That was the airfield. That's where all the aircraft landed. It's DZH... U.S. A-L-O-Y. A-L-O-Y. The Swale. We saw it in pre-flight all the time. Most of their range-head aircraft landed there. It was kind of like Sherry Chagan when they built the airfield there. The actual test site wasn't there, but that's where the airfield was. That's where the equipment came. You know, that's where, and they used ball caches looking for us.
Okay, so and the, that's where the... They were being used for construction.
That's what we were told.
And the Hollanders and Germans, or what they said were Hollanders
and
Germans,
white
were held
people.
In Kyorda? Kyorda?
Kizil Ordu.
How do you spell that?
K-Z-Y. Okay, it's right here. K-Z-Y-L-O-R-D-A. Now, do you want to hear a rumor? But fast around, this is something I always found really amazing from the old Corps. I mean, these, when I was a two-striper, these guys were...
Before that, I want to make to get straight on this. The Hollanders and Germans were not held in
Duskagen.
No, Dusali. They weren't held there. They were in...
It was a workplace, they said.
Dusali was a workplace.
A workplace, in other words.
And Kizil Ordu, where it is... was where the Hollanders and Germans were held.
That's where they were seen as well.
As well.
As
they're
well.
In both places.
But see, the Swale, from what these people and the this black consular officer, you know, I saw some of his reports, and, you know, they were just like yours, handwritten. I got the impression, as did Sergeant DeLois, that the ones that they did see there were, like, unloading aircraft. That's why they were at the airfield. And that Kizil Ordu was probably a confinement or containment area. Impression. That's the impression I got. These things were given to the consular officer. He's a black gentleman. And I'm sure they were taken down to the embassy at Karachi. Again, this is citing report category.
Okay.
You
know,
square on that.
This is your rumor?
Oh, a rumor, yeah. When I was just a young buck, when I was in Pakistan, we were provided protection by the Pakistani Army, and a lot of these people were British trained and all of this stuff. I mean, they spoke perfect English better than you and me. And one of the rumors that floated around between the Pakistani Army and some of the old corps, like the Lois and Hatfield and others, that the charm school was one of their cities up there at Aralsk, A-R-A-L-S-K. Was it? And I think that the rumor was primarily based on that this was a hot area. I don't remember what its purpose was, but you did get the special weapons air activity aircraft flying in there. And this was, I remember, this is just a rumor. Okay.
Well, how do you spell that again?
A-R-A-L-S-K. But see, we did see the special. See, we knew all the board numbers of the special aircraft. We knew exactly which ones were VIP, which ones were missile-related, which ones were, you know, high priority. And we also knew their manual Morris call signs. So when these aircraft flew, they were automatically reported. And they did fly into the Aralsk area. But for what purpose, I don't know. Maybe that's how the rumor got started. You know, it could very well just to... Well, we got nothing else at Aralsk. I mean, we got no, you know, tracking station there. We got no missile site there. We got no Top Gun school there. We got no this there. So what's left after you eliminate everything to try to explain these special weapons aircraft flying in there and these special aircraft? Maybe it's a charm school. So maybe that's how the rumor got started. But I thought I'd bring it up. You know, if it's right, you know, you might get yourself a bronze star.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd bring it up.
How about, you remember just after the tape died, I was asking about names for the Pickled Shovel Brigade?
Yeah, I had some.
Can I get one more thing so we'll have it in order? One more question first. I was going to let you go in. The other thing I want you to go over again was the profile flights. Remember you were talking about you transferred to eastern bases.
Right. What they would do is through this area is that they'd fly these long range, they'd use M4s.
Again, this is down in the Kazakh area.
Right. M4s, MYA-3s, TU-95s, and they'd fly these long profiles, you know, like SAC used to do back in that time. And then you'd take the tracking from these things, you know, just take the actual tracking on the same size map, move it up, and you could move it around, and you could see it as a profile that you could hit certain sizes.
And where were you moving it up to, just as an example?
Get the map out.
No, it was in the eastern...
Oh, yes, it was...
eastern
Magadan
Russia.
Was one of them. M-A-G-A-D-A-N, which was the 5th Air Army. These are not the best maps in the world, I'll tell you that. Anadir, which is also part of the 5th Long Range AM. A-N-A-D-Y-R, Anadir. I believe there's been sightings at Magadan, but they were long after we were doing this profile size. I think this
What year was this in, by the way?
This was when I was in Pakistan, 1960. This stuff was key punched out. First it was pre-flighted, that was sent to MPU, USA 751, and on to NSA, so it's in computers. Then when the flights actually took place, after the pre-flights, it was also MPU'd up to Freiburg in Germany, you know, inform us, you know, with all the codes and everything else, where somebody could put on a tracking app or run into the computer and have an amateur track it, and that went on to NSA after that. But we filtered everything through MPU, USA 751, which I think was a 6 mile first security wing out of Freiburg. Here's what it was. That was the headquarters in Europe. Because back then, you know, the communications, this is like today where you're calling anywhere in the world, you had, you know, terminals. You went to terminals, and ours was Freiburg. That's where our main headquarters was. There was one other place here, too. Now, the government has a map of this, and they have it by category, but I don't know which branch of the government. Because I put it together, and God knows where it went. But I have it color-coded and all that stuff. With the MVs, which one we considered priority one, priority two, priority three. And I don't know if it went to Congress, I don't know if it went to NSA, I don't know where it went to. But I was asked to redo the map to the best of my recollection, I redid the map to the best of my recollection, and the government took it because it was all done under government control when I was involved with the Senate Select Committee. So I don't know where the map went to. I honestly don't. But I thought it would be shared to be checked out. That was my impression that people would take that map, the whole intelligence community would take the map, and go back and take the information, try to find it, and then do correlations with sighting reports. Because there were sighting reports, I think, not then, but, back then, but I don't think they were released. Like at Magadan, there's been sighting reports. I think there's been sighting reports at Anadir. I've seen those. They've been declassified.
You mean sighting reports of Americans?
Americans, yes, from the Korean War. I've seen some of those documents. I think I saw them last July when I was out in the National Alliance. A year ago, July, somebody had them. They're actual government documents. And they dealt with Magadan and Anadir. And there's another name, but I can't find it on the map. I'm sorry. I seem to want to look over here, but it seems to be another name somewhere, but. It just slipped my mind. There was three names, I know that. But it's on that map I turned over to the government. I put it together and gave it to the government, along with a little brief write-up. You know. I didn't put any analysis on it because I gave it to them and let them do their own thing, so they influenced by what I said. You know. It was a little scary at that time when I was out there because I didn't know who was coming at me. I didn't know if Congress was friendly or unfriendly, you know. I didn't know, you know, which senators were on whose side or what side. I had the agenda. Noel Stone was going to be left on turn. I had my own investigator, Mr. Lang, assigned to me because he had all the clearances and he was supposed to go behind all kinds of closed doors to get into the intelligence links and the diplomatic links and all this stuff. So I was sitting there and the only function I had was, yes, sir, no, sir, what's the next question, sir? Because I didn't know what the agenda was. I know what the public statement was. But I didn't know what the agenda was, and it was none of my business, to be honest with you. And
And CW had a question.
You picked several brigades, you said you correlated 80 names to it.
Yeah, about 80 is my best my recollection. I think when I redid the thing, I never even came close to the 80. I think probably when I put them on the briefing strip, maybe running around 60, 50. It's on the briefing strip.
Were these people held at other camps and then pulled out, or?
No, the only place that we got the references to me and truck traffic was out of Run Run. That's right on the coast. See if we can find a map in Vietnam, we'll show you.
Oh, that's all right. We'll
okay. And then you'd see those references by the VOCN around Thach Bon. You'd see them around Long Bay. See, now the trouble with reporting to VOCN, the Visual Observation Corps Network, that's how we found this cover name San Te. You know, and then I found out just recently, guess what, it's right next to the MR4 headquarters, or the hospital. You know, and I didn't even know that when we... See, the way how we found cover name San Te is these aircraft were taken off, going up to Baitong, and these idiots, because Colonel Kennedy and everybody knew that they were, if the Soviets were taking our man, number one, we were not going to see it. We shouldn't, because they had none of their own communications, not like it was in Cuba. If we saw anything like it, it would be a shot in the dark, a lucky mistake. Well, it so happened that we had some aircraft flying over this area, and they referenced an F-4, and they referenced he just passed over San Te. Well, we matched it up against the radar tracking. Well, it wasn't up by the San Te. It was down here. Then there was references, and this only happened maybe three or four times, to Americans being put on trucks from San Te by these visual observer in clear text, not coded, and being taken up to Baitung Airfield. So we went down the CREF files and looked at San Te, and most of the records were the San Te, the one that's on the map. Then we found a 3x5 or 5x8 card down there talking about a San Te, which at one time had been a French facility, and gave us a location for it, which was right in this place where the F-4 was and where the visual observers were talking. And I don't remember if it said it had a capacity of 100 beds or 100 men or something like that, but it was like 100, around 100.
Where was it?
The government has that map, too. I put it on a map for them, but I didn't know MR4 Hospital was right next to it. It was northwest of Vang. Then we saw another occasion where they went up to Baitung Airfield, and then an IL-14 flew out, and they reported him by compass rules, but there was no air-to-ground communications. The only thing there was mic clicks. In other words, the guy was saying, turn left to 330-degree ground controller, turn left to 330-degree, but usually somebody come back and say, Roger, I've done that, You get click-click, like the MiGs used to do when they flew silent. You get click-click. So there's no communications on this IL-14, but from the compass rose headings by the visual observers on the ground, they'd say 34 is this direction, 22 is this direction, 14 is this. It went direct from Baitung to San Juan. So we had these references in clear text on the truck, coming from this so-called San Te, that we found in the CREF files, 2x2. We had the clicking of the aircraft over. Now, the assumption is they got on the aircraft, otherwise why'd they go up there, haul them up there? And why the secrecy of the flight? They flew to San Nua, because that's the direction it was headed. No radar tracking, only these visual observers, and which was, if that's a secret flight, they just blew security. That's what they did. Because we would not suspect to see something like that of hauling American prisoners around. Then you have the Australian 60 Minutes program where you got that Russian, the Aussies found. It said he flew IL-14s or something in the Soviet Union. I didn't watch it that close. So that there's another little thing that pumps it up on a table that has to be looked at, see what's going on, and then junk it if it's no good. But it needs to be up on the table.
Gary, what you're saying is the Americans would be trucked from this secret underground facility to Baitung Airfield. Mm-hmm. And one time you guys saw where an IL-14 took off from this airfield.
Right after the trucks got there.
Right after the trucks
See,
got there.
We got confused when we first saw this stuff. The visual observer says there's two Americans on the first report, a kilometer so-and-so, on highway so-and-so. Well, we thought it was two fighters, We thought, they're talking like they usually do. It was kind of a funny thing saying two BBs rather than two F-4s. Then later, further up the line, another one of these guys says, yeah, they're here, in just casual conversation. These guys are talking on R-109, saying, yeah, they're here. And the guys just went by. The guys is a truck. So what we had, we thought we could have just been them saying there's two, instead of saying two F4s, they said two Americans, no being wrong. All of a sudden it went right down to a truck. Then I think there was another reference. And I believe, I'm almost sure this happened in 1968 when we saw this reference. We only saw rarely, I'd say less than three times, at the most three times, that we saw, because it had to be a security breach. You know, if the analysis and correlation all fit and is correct, then it had to be a very secure security breach on their part. And the mic clicks, you know, adds the mysterious level to it. Why isn't this aisle 14 power, if he's carrying a couple sheep over Sam Newell for the commander's supper that night, why is he clicking? Why isn't he acknowledging, you know, his transmissions from the ground? Because the only other time he used mic clicks is when they would sneak around, you know, on the belly, if they didn't do a zoom plan, the fighters, and a GCI controller would say turn left 20 degrees, no radar tracking when he's on the deck, and the pilot would be on mic clicking, and GCI controller would be watching an F4 and F105 and telling this guy bringing him in, but we'd have so many aircraft he couldn't tell which one he's after, because you're not getting positions and the pilot is not responding. And it isn't until he hits his zoom climb that the pilot comes on the air. You know, he's getting ready to shoot an ATOL or an alkali or something like that. But he's all in the F4 or the F105 has already got somebody coming right up on a zoom climb. So that to see mic clicks on a transporter was very, I only saw it on these occasions. That doesn't say that somebody else hadn't seen it, you know. I only saw it on this occasion. Fighters, yes, lots of times, but on transports, I can't recall. Of course, I didn't look at everything now, but I never heard anybody mention mic clicks on transports, except on this occasion.
So, the IL-14 was a Soviet aircraft. I know it's a Soviet type aircraft.
I don't know if it owned to the Vietnamese, or if it was a Soviet manned. Because, like I say, there was no voice. There's no way we could tell. Because, I mean, if it was a Russian speaking Vietnamese, I think our operators would have knew that. You know, if he would have spoke, I think our operators would have put down, like, you know, operators are pretty good. If they can see something abnormal, they'll put an off note in there right after that particular transmission. They'll do it both on the hand log, and they'll do it on the transcription. So if there would have been voice, and it would have been a Russian pilot talking Vietnamese, he would have put it down. But there was no voice. Just clicks. You had the Vietnamese voice going out. But not, you know, we had no voice coming down. None whatsoever. We considered it a stroke a lot. And that was research going back. You know, the traffic, I believe, was 68, but we didn't notice it until like 70, 71, when we were still going back to the traffic. We did not note it at the time. So this is not something that we noted at the time. And then the CREF files, the card file, talking about this French facility. And for some reason, it seems to me that it was a medical facility. It was in the CREF files. I'm not sure, but it wasn't a detention. It wasn't a secret French facility. It was just a French facility underground. You know, it wasn't designed to hide anything. I got the impression like a bunker place, and you'd grow grass on top of it or something like that. And I don't recall the date of the CREF information. But supposedly all that CF information was sent down to the Senate Select Committee, because it's all on computers now, and I think NSA sent down the old files because Mr. Lang and others were interested in notes on there. You know, like analysts would come down and write notes on the file. In fact, if you go down to CF file, somebody would say, Sergeant John Jones, if you're looking at this, you know, please give me a ring because I'm interested in this piece of information too. You know, so this guy was would leave notes on the CREF cards. You know, if somebody else was interested, the same thing. But that CREF stuff was really good stuff. But again, it doesn't stand alone. I mean, you have to have, you know, correlated data to back it up. Something again that comes up on the table. You know, look at it. See, from the beginning, that's been my only purpose. To bring the system through the travels, check it out, bring it up on the table. Check it out, get it done, get the answers, settle the issue. We're not going to resolve it. Hell, last year, we were still digging up bones and Custer's last stand out there. I mean, they found more bones than this. You know, so how long is it going to be in Korea and World War II and Vietnam that you're still going to be seeking resolution? But informationally, like the colonel said one time, informationally, the intelligence service should be able to settle this issue of the MIAs, and that's the word he used, at the 95% level. You should be able to have an honest point. That doesn't mean you're going to be absolutely correct, but you will have an honest point that we can live with. You know, because if we were perfect, know, we'd look like George Burns and play old God in the movie. I mean, we're not perfect. But Colonel Kenny was talking around the 95% level. We should get to a settlement. And some are only going to be known to God. I mean, you know, forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. In conclusion, I'd like to say, when I was in the business, when I used to get upset, the people who didn't like me would call me a pompous ass because I'd just tear out. Okay. And this is some of Tom Lang's memos. Colonel and a couple of the officers used to call me a swooping eagle because if I hit the ground running, if they wanted something, I didn't give a damn where I'd go. I'd go get it for them. They wanted to report it. Mr. Tilly on the intelligence fix-up, he wanted it. I don't care if I went down and rattled Comfy Coast Cage or anybody. So I can get pretty upset. But I'm really surprised at myself because after the last 10 years, I've been hit pretty hard. And I've never got upset because I've always had this idea, time is going to bring information. Information is going to bring alertness. Alertness is going to bring investigation. Investigation is going to bring settlement. But there is one incident that's happened in the last 10 years that I have a very strong Merchant of Venice attitude towards. My grandson was 4 years old, Christmas Eve, received a phone call. I was sitting at the desk in my little office at home, right outside, as a living room. He was watching TV. I believe the Disney Channel. He come running to me crying like a baby. 4 years old now. And later his mother had to take him to a psychologist over this incident. What he was told over the phone was, you better have a good Christmas with your grandpa or something to that effect because we're going to kill him. Now my daughter picked him up because he was living with us. She was on nurse's training, but she had to take him to a psychologist. Now I don't think anybody in the government is stupid enough to do that. That is something. I mean, there's too many other ways to get to the bottom line than to play silly questions like this. But just, I want people to know, and I've told everybody, that if I ever find out who this son of a bitch is, I mean, he's going to find some Pol Pot body surfing. There'll be some Montana justice on him. I don't care what they say about me. I don't care how they bang on me. But damn it, leave my family alone. This is big man's business. This is big man's stuff. Where people can take their licks and get their chops kicked in. And when you start picking on kids, that's when I get pissed. Because it's none of their damn business. They're supposed to be happy playing Little League, playing basketball, not putting up with this type of bullshit.
When was this?
This was in Christmas Eve of 88, I believe. Now, the thing that upset me, point number two that upset me, the incident in Washington, D.C. in 86. When the Arlington police, when I had those phone calls, and then on the second, third call, the operator heard them. I was told, all right, there's going to be an investigation by the Arlington police, and there's going to be an investigation by the Justice Department over this. Because you don't threaten Senate witnesses. Nothing was done. When I went to the Senate Select Committee, I went through some of the stuff, and I have a logbook at home of every incident that's ever happened. I got a logbook. In fact, my lawyer's got it. Because someday I want to find these bastards. And I don't think they're the government. I'll be honest with you. I don't think the government's that stupid. Because that's one way to really blow your position, okay? I'd never do anything like that, no matter how mad I got at somebody, you know what I mean? But I was told right there in open session, there'll be an investigation of this stuff that's went on. Nothing was ever done. Well, now I don't want anything done. I mean, I consider we should start anew, get onto this thing. And if I ever run into this bastard, that's my business. That's my business. I think he's probably a scumbag of the world. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's somebody that's in the issue just trying to shake me up so I'll run crying to Senator Smith or Senator so-and-so and say, look, what's happening to me? You know what I mean? And then I turn out to be poor little old Mooney and look at the big that government's picking on me. So that's where I think it's coming from. Let alone if I ever catch this bastard. First of all, he's going to get the bill for the psychologist. That's the first thing he's going to get the bill. And then he's going to have to get the bill to go down and get some new teeth. Okay? So if any of the family members come at you and say that, well, look at all these things that happened, Mooney, why you guys done it? Hey, you can tell him Mooney doesn't believe you've done it. All right? Because I don't think the government's that stupid. I think too professional. Too professional, you know. CIA may go out and shoot a president of some foreign country, but then there'd be good cause and reason, huh?
Okay, now we got that on tape. Is that all you have, Jared? Is there anything
else? Last part was a joke to kind of close this off with some humor. Okay.
Okay, that's it.